Today's podcast is brought to you by Howie's new book, Paperboy. To order today, go to HowieCarshow.com and click on store.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
We got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice. Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald and the Spectator.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Here's the millennial with the mic, Grace Curley.
Welcome to the Grace Curley Show. Hello, everyone. I am Aaron Chadbourne. I am not the millennial with the mic. I'm a millennial with a mic. Grace is off on spring break. This is her last day. She'll be back on Monday. So if you've been missing her all week, don't worry. She'll be back. This is my final day filling in for Grace. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks to all of you for having me here, to the team at the Howie Car Radio Network for making it so easy to fill in. You guys are awesome. And Jared, I really tried not to pay attention to this fundraiser that Biden was doing yesterday, but there's so much to talk about with it. Like, I mean, here's the thing. I think presidents generally should be a little bit conscious when they come to town, and New York City in particular, because the way that they travel and the way they have to travel with Secret Service ends up shutting the city down. I used to live in D.C., and in D.C. you kind of get used to it because there's always someone moving about, the motorcade goes through. But when you go to New York City or Chicago or any of the places the presidents go, Delaware, I'm sure, it's just a major, major disruption to everyone. It's like the same level of disruption in New York City as what you're seeing with the collapsed bridge in Baltimore. Like everything screeches to a standstill. So Biden goes, he's doing this, you know, while Trump is at the wake for the fallen officer slain in the line of duty, New York Mayor Eric Adams, former President Donald Trump, they're at the wake, but Biden's in town to raise money. With featuring performances by Lizzo, Mindy Kaling. What does Mindy Kaling do? How does she perform? I also didn't know. When I heard they were doing a fundraiser, like I picture it at like some rich donor's house. No. It was Radio City Music Hall. They filled Radio City Music Hall. They charged anywhere from $250. That was the cheap seats were $250 to a maximum of $500,000. Who's paying $500,000? To go see Joe Biden and Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. And I guess that's why. So if you watch any of this stuff, and it was obviously private, but some people these days, people have their iPhones. So you see Lizzo trying to hype people up. Like Lizzo's performing, trying to hype people up in her weird bodysuit that she's wearing. And you can tell that like there is no enthusiasm. And that's what I think they're doing right now is they're trying to like astroturf enthusiasm for the Biden campaign. And you do it by bringing in like Lizzo and Queen Latifah and Mindy Kaling and then Barack Obama and Bill Clinton, like, cause he needs hype people because he's not hyped himself. But you know, Jared, what I thought the weirdest thing was, it was not that you could pay $100,000 to get your picture with these three former presidents, which, you know, as like an American history buff, like whatever, like to be in the same room as three former U.S. presidents, that's historic, that's cool, but it's a political event, right? So it's all politics. You could pay $100,000 to get your picture, and that picture would be taken by Annie Leibovitz. But that's not even the weirdest point. Jared, you know what the weirdest point was of this fundraiser?
I didn't see any of it, so no, I don't know.
Okay, I'll send you this video that you have to watch. Do you know how Joe Biden walked on stage?
No. I mean, poorly, I'm assuming, but
he didn't. What they did is they had, you know, those times you go to a concert where like someone rises up from underneath it and you're elevated in. They had like this little kind of talk show set kind of chairs on this, like, and then they had, it was just Clinton, Biden, and Obama emerged. Like they rose up. And then they didn't have to walk anywhere.
But they came out of the floor onto the stage?
Yes. Rose out of the floor onto the stage. This is how bad Biden is at being a human being, let alone at being president. They're so worried that they don't even let him walk on stage anymore.
He was pre-placed.
Like, you can't make this up. Like, I had to watch it like two or three times, and I was like, because at first it reminds me of, I don't know if it's still there, but you know when you used to go to, was it Epcot, where they had the like Hall of American Presidents, and you had these like audio animatronic, like, Abe Lincoln would talk to you, or George Washington. Like, that's what it looks like. It looks like they're kind of like robotic characters emerging out of the stage. Like, all of a sudden they just lift right up with this like talk show set behind them. So they can just like, after they wave and everyone's more excited to see like Obama than they are to see Biden, obviously. And then like, he shakes hands with Clinton. He like, you know, kind of shakes hands with Obama, and then they just sit down. Like, that's the level of like protection around Joe Biden. His staff has such little confidence in him. They won't let him walk in public. And I guess I don't know how he, and if anyone's seen this, please call or text in and let me know. I don't know how they got him off the stage. I don't know how they got him off the stage, because if they wouldn't let him walk on the stage, it's really leaving the stage where he usually has the most trouble.
Yeah, I'm actually watching it right now on Twitter. That's nuts. That's crazy.
Right? Like, I've never seen anything like it. And that was the first thing that I was like, wait a minute, where the heck was this event? And so the event was at Radio City Music Hall, which, in addition to the fact that all of New York City needed to shut down for the motorcade and for his Secret Service and protection, and having a president in New York can be difficult, although Trump figured it out. But remember how the media was like nonstop, they would rag on Trump because he was coming to New York, and they're like, how dare he? It disrupts everything. And then they're like, it's love fest for Biden. Oh, it's so wonderful. Three presidents under one roof on one stage, or risen up into one stage. So very interesting, like very interesting that they did it this way, but I just, so it's a Radio City Music Hall, which meant, by the way, that the protests outside, which were mostly pro-Palestinian protesters were nonstop. Like, they shut down Times Square essentially. And it was crazy. And I think one of them, at least, Jared, made it into the event.
Yes. Somebody got in somehow.
Wow. So that pro-Palestinian protester, they paid over $250, we know. Probably not much, because like, it looks from the video that these were the cheap seats. But let's go ahead. Do we have audio of that protester? Is that cut three?
There was an insurrection.
Shame on you, Joe Biden! Shame on you! Shame on you! You are funding genocide of Palestine, and no amount of full concern that you do
Well, I did say earlier this week, like, where does George W. Bush go to get his apology for the fact that everyone lampoons him? Like, you haven't seen these sorts of protests at presidential events, I think, since Bush and Cheney. But here's the question for you, Jared, and one thing that we really need to think about, and I think we're already starting to see this change in posture of the administration. The more that this happens, that you have these pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas protests go on, how long before Biden flip-flops and just kind of abandons Israel? We're already starting to see it, right? We're already starting to see them back away, volunteer to take on peacekeeping missions in Gaza. Like, we're starting to see the very public split between Netanyahu and Biden earlier this week, when Netanyahu said, oh, we have concerns, we want to meet with your people. They said, okay, we'll send our generals to Washington to meet with the Biden administration. And then at the UN, they asked the U.S. to veto a security resolution that was calling for an immediate ceasefire. And when the U.S. didn't veto it, like they have several of the others, Israel said, forget it. We're not sending our people over to you. If you don't have our back, then we're not going to do it. Now, I think it's legitimate to have questions about Israel and what they're doing in Gaza, how they're conducting the war. But they are a sovereign nation, one that we support, one that we protect because of the vital role they play in the Middle East. Fair to question them. But when you're the president of the United States, you've stood so publicly with them, and then in the face of political pressure in your Democratic primary, which was largely non-existent, Biden right now is worried about losing Democrats. He's worried about losing Democrat votes. I had breakfast with a friend this morning who is a Democrat, and said, you know, I'm so worried that Trump's going to be president again, because a lot of my liberal friends are saying, oh, we can't possibly vote for Biden because of what he's doing in Palestine. And I said, well, there's a long time between now and November. And you have to remember that. voters tend to express their concerns early and then they tend to come home. So I don't think this Palestine thing is really going to keep people from voting for Biden. I think at the end of the day, Biden's going to beat the drum that Trump is the worst. Trump is the worst. Got to keep Trump out. The people that have Trump derangement syndrome, do you think they're going to stay home? No, they're probably still going to show back up. So it's really on Trump and the Republicans to continue to grow the tent, make the case, go on all of Biden's other weaknesses when it comes to crime, law and order, when it comes to the economy. I don't think most people are going to make their decision based on what's happening in the Middle East. But I think that there are people that are just so worried about losing any Democrats. They see everything as a threat. They see it as a threat if it's these pro-Palestine protesters. They see it as a threat. I mean, RFK, look at how they're handling RFK and the threat that he presents. Let's take cut two, Jared.
But these third party candidates are a huge, huge, huge problem. And there's a number of them. If you look at RFK Jr., it's the name recognition issue, as Tom was just talking about. And there are still states in this country, obviously, I mean, Georgia is one of them I will name, where the Kennedy name is beloved, right? Where people may just not where they may just not know a lot about the fact that he is an anti-vaxxer who's a conspiracy theorist. They don't know that yet. So this is something, there is an aggressive effort that the campaign has been working with the Democratic National Committee on to run on this, but it needs to be broad. People need to be shouting it from the rooftops, because this is the one of the biggest threats to Joe Biden being reelected, is these third party candidates. If you look at Michigan, Mika, and I know Alyssa Slotkin is going to be on later. I almost called her Senator. Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin is going to be on later. Michigan is a state where RFK, I think, is polling at 10%, right? And so this is a place where Joe Biden needs to win. And RFK Jr. is making a real threat to that. So it's good we're talking about it. It is a real threat. They're aware of it, but more needs to be done and more people need to be talking about it and aware.
Okay, so a few things here. Number one, I thought Jen Psaki was a journalist. The journalist saying, like, more needs to be done. We need to do this. She's still speaking like a campaign operative. But hear the panic in her voice. Hear the panic in her voice that there's something that Biden's doing that might send people not to vote for Trump, but to vote for RFK. And that's what this whole protest is about, Palestine, what's happening in Gaza with policy in Israel, with Israel after Hamas. These protests are driving them into a panic because they are not used to being challenged. They want complete fealty and loyalty. They want to destroy anything that might challenge their iron grip on it. And so that's what's going on. And I think you're going to see more and more of Biden caving in order to appease these mobs on the left because of his fear about RFK, because of I mean, how unexcited people are. The fact that you as president can't fill Radio City Music Hall yourself, you've got to bring in Barack Obama and Bill Clinton and Lizzo and Queen Latifah and Mindy Kaling. Like, that is what's happening. They know the emperor has no clothes. They're panicking, and we're going to see a lot more desperation. When we come back, we're going to get into our poll question. We're going to talk about Easter candy. If you haven't taken the poll question, you can go to gracecurlyshow.com. I am Aaron Chadbourne, filling in for Grace. You're listening to The Grace Curley Show.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. This is The Grace Curley Show.
We are back on The Grace Curley Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne, sitting in for Grace Curley. Thanks so much for being with us today and for sticking with us all week, really. I know Grace leaves big shoes to fill, but she has such a great audience, great team here, that it's just a pleasure to be here. Now, I know one thing Grace is going to be mad that she's missing out on is the discussion of Easter and Easter candy, which brings us to today's poll question. Today's poll question is brought to you by Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier. Back in stock now. Our friends at Eden Pure have brought back the BOGO, very, very popular BOGO offer. That's buy one, get one. Order now at EdenPureDeals.com. Use code GRACEBOGO. These go fast, so don't miss out on your opportunity to buy one, get one free. I love the thunderstorm. All right, let's go to the poll question, Jared. What is today's poll question, and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is what's your favorite Easter candy? Peeps, Cadbury cream eggs, jelly beans, robin eggs, hollow chocolate bunny, or solid chocolate bunny?
This is a tough one because, like, I think I have a lot to say about Peeps. I think Peeps is one of those, like, uniquely Easter candies, and I'm not sure that all the rest of them are. The Cadbury Cream Egg is, too. I think when I was a kid, I would probably say Cadbury Cream Eggs. But nowadays, I think, like, just solid chocolate. Like, any form of solid chocolate is what I go with. So I'm going to go with the solid chocolate bunny.
You are the bride today, sir. 31% for the solid chocolate bunny in the lead. 19% for jelly beans in second place. 18% for the Cadbury Cream Egg. 16% for Peeps. 10% for robin eggs, and 6% for the hollow chocolate bunny.
What are the robin eggs? Are those gross, so, like, milk ball ones? Like, they're Whoppers, the just pretending to be an Easter candy?
Yeah, it's the Whoppers Easter candy. Yeah.
That's disgusting. I don't know who those 10% are that voted for the robin eggs, but, like,
I enjoy the robin eggs, actually.
The Lee Zeldin for vice president contingent out there. It's all about the robin eggs, malted milk balls. Like, the only thing I like about it is the crunch. Like, there's a very satisfying crunch you get from the malt, like, the Whopper. But the taste, that malt, like, I don't know. Like, how do you even do it? Like, it's not even a candy. It's kind of like, you know, when you think something is going to be, like, sweet or a chocolate and you bite into it and it's not. Like, that's how I feel about those.
Old school confections like molasses puff or, you know, something like that.
Yeah. Or like lemon meringue when you, like, taste just the meringue and you're like, what am I doing? Like, but this is the thing about Easter candy is, like, there's some things we left off of here too. So I apologize because I was, you know, not fully with it this morning when we wrote the poll question. But, like, there are some other ones, like the Cadbury mini eggs. Like, I could eat a million of those. Like, the Cadbury mini eggs. So, like, those, that candy shell. It's kind of but it's different than M&M's because it kind of has that, like, chalky likeness to the outside. And then you crunch through it and it's just, like, good Cadbury chocolate. And there's a lot of it. But, like, you definitely get sick from eating too many, which I definitely, like, find myself in. Or then the other one I hear a lot of that we didn't ask. And so we probably should add another, but whatever. It's Friday. Reese's does, like, again, it's another cheat, just like M&M's. M&M's does, like, Easter color, but that doesn't make it an Easter candy. Like, that makes it a year-round candy that's just, like, you know, cosplaying as Easter candy. But I think, like, there's a case to be made for the Reese's Easter egg candy because it takes on a different shape than the regular Reese's cup. So you have, like, a different proportion of chocolate to peanut butter. And I also think the normal Reese's cup is a little bit, like, waxier because I think they have to, like, make it, like, not melt and be, like, shelf stable for longer because it's going to be there, like, year round. You don't know. You can sell it anytime. Where I think the Easter candy, I don't know if they have to put, like, less of whatever the preservative is in it, but there are a lot of people who will tell you that they like the Reese's egg more than they like the regular Reese's cup. Have you heard this? Am I alone?
No, you are. And they do definitely taste different. Everybody that I've doctor that's had him said there's a definite difference in taste. They can't really nail it down, but it might be the waxiness of the chocolate, like you're talking about.
I think it's shelf stability. Like, I
but
think
again,
that's
they do that with trees for Christmas and pumpkins for Halloween, so it's kind of a, I didn't think it was exactly an Easter candy since they gimmick it up for every holiday.
No, I get it. I think it's just because, like, the egg shape is the closest to the actual, like, cup. So it's, like, a little bit less of a departure. And I think a little bit better, like a tree, like, who cares about that? Or a pumpkin, Reese's pumpkin. All right. We're here on the Grace Curley Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne, in for Grace. When we come back, we're going to check in on our friend Ronna McDaniel and what her payout is here on the Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show, everyone. I'm Aaron Chadbourne. I am in for Grace, broadcasting in Portland from the WGAN studio. It's a pleasure to be here with you. If you don't know me, I host Inside Maine on WGAN. I also fill in for Matt Gagnon on the WGAN Morning News. And I used to work for Governor Paula Page, who we certainly miss and wish he were still running the state of Maine instead of Janet Mills, who she and the Democrats up here in Maine are getting ready to pass a red flag law. We have the yellow flag law, which the panel just said could have been used and wasn't used in the Lewiston shooting. And so, you know, never let a crisis go to waste. We expect to see that happen. But this is the thing about the Democrats. They're doing it. They're rushing it through at the very end of legislative session. They're supposed to adjourn in 2 weeks. And they just printed the bill yesterday, and they're going to do a rush public hearing next week. Not with 2 weeks notice, as is typical under the rules in Maine. They can suspend the rules, which is what the Democrats will do. And they're going to go and infringe people's rights to keep and bear arms. So it's interesting. It's interesting to see them rush that through. My former boss, Paula Page, never would have let it happen. We'll see whether or not Janet Mills stands on the side of people's constitutional rights or whether she tries to rush things past people, hoping they're not paying attention. Speaking of not paying attention, one person that I don't think a lot of us paid attention to during the presidential primary was Nikki Haley. She kind of flew under the radar for most of the primary until everyone dropped out, and then she was the last person standing. She had made the argument all the way along that if it was just one-on-one versus Trump, then she would take off. Obviously, that didn't happen. Didn't happen on Super Tuesday. Didn't happen in South Carolina. Didn't happen anywhere. But over the break, there's a breaking news that the Biden-Harris campaign has just announced, has just released a new campaign ad targeting Nikki Haley voters. Game changer. Nikki Haley voters being courted by Joe Biden. I don't know, Jared, like, do you think there's a really big core of Nikki Haley voters that are going to swing this election?
No, all of the Biden voters voted for Nikki Haley in the primary. They're already there.
Well, no, that's where she did the best, though. She did the best in places where there were open primaries, where Democrats or independents could come into the Republican primary and vote. So they're already going to vote for Biden anyway.
They're already in the camp. But again, another well-thought-out, dead-on-target move by this administration.
What happened, though, is you have, and the way I saw it on Twitter, is you have this tweet by Jonathan Martin from Politico or Axios or wherever he's at now. J-Mart sends out this tweet being like, you know, after Chris Christie flirted with running for the no labels, the Biden administration really needs to do more to court these, like, never-Trumper Republicans. I mean, the never-Trumper Republicans are already never voting for Trump. So, like, what do you need to do? It's to make them turn out instead of stay home. Like, I mean, if they're really, really focused on that, aren't they going to turn? Like, I just don't understand this new political campaign philosophy that's, like, always focused on, like, you've got to reward. But it's because I think in Democrat circles, like, they think that what was the group called, the Lincoln Project?
Yeah.
They think those strategies, like, oh, if we only did more of that. And, like, they've been proven that they don't work. The people that support Donald Trump, there are some people that just love Trump, right? There are people that just love Trump. There are people who are like, well, finally someone that's not beholden to the establishment has come along, and he's going to stand up. He's going to say what he thinks. Some people want to burn it all down, and they think that's what Trump's going to do. A lot of people want to see the border enforced. They want to see actual security at the border. A lot of people remember what the economy looked like under Donald Trump versus what they've dealt with inflation and just how things have gotten worse under Joe Biden. And so there are a lot of different reasons why people are supporting Trump, but the media class, the political class, the beautiful people, they think if they just one more time tell you what a bully he is, remember those mean tweets? This guy is a threat to democracy. It reminds me literally of that time that the Democrats in Maine and some of the Republicans all gang together to try to impeach Governor Paula Page because he left an unpleasant voicemail on the voicemail of a Democrat lawmaker who he was told called him a racist. And so he called him and he was quite upset, and he left a really nasty, voicemail on his voicemail. And then they wanted to impeach him over it. And guess what? Mean tweets are not an impeachable offense. A nasty voicemail is not an impeachable defense. It's just they're looking for anything because in their worldview, in their way of life, no one could ever possibly support someone that they don't support. They absolutely couldn't do it. But what they don't understand the appeal of someone like Donald Trump when you have a president like Joe Biden. Let's listen to how Judge Jeanine breaks it down. Let's go to cut five.
Look, we had four presidents in New York City today. Three of them were here for a political reason. Three of them were here to raise money. Three of them were here to make sure that the fourth president didn't become president again. And one president alone, was here to pay respect to a fallen police officer who should never have died in the line of duty. Now, you see that front line in front of that funeral home? I've been in that line many times. And what you have are the law enforcement community who know who supports them. They know who doesn't support them. And today, when Joe Biden landed at 1:30, he could have gone to that wake. He did a podcast with some celebrity. That's more important to him. Raising money is more important. Joe Biden is about America last. Donald Trump is about America first. Joe Biden is about opening the border and sanctuary cities and recidivist crimes. Donald Trump is about law and order and supporting the police.
So that's the thing, right? It's the distinction. It's the difference. It's the, you know, Trump is going to take the opportunity to bring attention to needing to support law enforcement. The thing they always say, like, oh, but on January 6th. Like, no, on January 6th, he told people to respect law and order, to respect law enforcement. That the narratives that they promote on that day and elsewhere about not supporting law enforcement is what leads to what we're seeing, right? Like, that's what Trump's argument is. But instead, you know, the beautiful people all get together. In would you call it, Jared, a special moment for the country? Let's go ahead to former press secretary for President Obama, Robert Gibbs. Cut four.
But I think what you'll see really come through, because so few people in our country's history have occupied this office, is a tremendous respect and reverence for what each has been has accomplished over their time in office. And really, again, to underscore and put into plain language what Joe Biden's been able to do over the past 4 years. I think it's going to be a really terrific and special moment for the campaign and for the country to see.
It's going to be a really special moment. Really special moment. And like, what's special about them? Oh, they're just there. They just showed up. You're lucky to be in their presence. It's like royalty. It's like this old mindset of celebrity, of royalty. That's why the campaign isn't about policy. It's not about what they would do for the country. It's about Donald Trump being the boogeyman, and you're just lucky to be in our presence. Congratulations. You're welcome. That song from Moana. My niece loves Moana right now. And she knows all the songs, but that song, it's basically like, you're welcome. Like, here we are. We're here to say, like, don't ask any questions. Don't look under the hood. Don't talk about our economy, but you're welcome. Meanwhile, you have Trump out there talking about the things that people actually care about. Go ahead. Cut six.
We have to stop it. We have to get back to law and order. We have to do a lot of things differently because this is not working. This is happening too often.
And take cut seven.
They're not given the respect. The police are the greatest people we have. There's nothing and there's nobody like them, and this should never happen.
That's the contrast, and that's generally what's at stake, and that's why things like an ad saying, oh, yeah, but he's mean to Nikki Haley, like, that's not going to sway the election. I'm interested in knowing what you think. 844-500-4242, the number here at the Grace Curley Show. Let's go to the phone lines and talk to Tom. Tom, welcome to the Grace Curley Show.
Yeah, I've been told since Trump was president, that he's going to be a dictator, he's going to be an authoritarian. And I look at what Joe Biden has done with regards to the electric car mandates. And I'm being told by progressives, whether you like it or not, you're going to be driving an electric car in the future, whether you like it or not. Now, Joe Biden hasn't come out and said that verbatim, but these mandates, what they're doing is that you're going to have to get an electric car, whether you like it or not. I hate to repeat myself, but isn't that what authoritarians do? Of, if you don't like it, too bad. You're going to do it because I say so. Am I right or am I wrong?
Good points, Tom. Thanks for the call. I think, you know, what they'll tell you and what they say is it's about process. But here we followed the process. And what happened during the 2020 election is that they changed the process in the middle of the game, not following the rules. And that's when people like Ronna McDaniel and others talk about it. You know, even if you believe that there was no voter fraud or any of that, or not enough to influence election. There was rewriting of the rules and violating the process, which is exactly what you're talking about, Tom. And what you see in authoritarian regimes where they'll change the rules to suit their outcome, where they'll kick their opponents off the ballot because heaven forbid you let people vote for who they want to vote for. If you're so convinced that you can beat Donald Trump and that he's such a threat to democracy, beat him at the ballot box. I'd be interested in taking more comments and calls. 844-500-4242, the number here on the Grace Curley Show. While you call in, though, I did want to say, Jared, I thought it was great when we talked to Dave Hinchey yesterday at the Nauset Beach Inn, and they really have some great deals going on now, particularly for May as we head in. As we look at these like rainy days right now, you think about what could I be doing? Getting out to the Nauset Beach Inn, seeing, you know, walking on the beach, enjoying those ocean views, using the fire pits, that's something people might want to do.
Yeah, and if you heard Dave yesterday, he said get on it because reservations are really filling up fast. So hop on this deal now. April stays at the Nauset Beach Inn from $249.99 a night, and in May, rates from $259.99 a night. Don't delay. These rooms go fast. We did a Grace's Goodies with them yesterday, and they sold out. Howie did a Cheap Bastard deal. They sold out, so there's a lot of demand for the Nauset Beach Inn right now. I've been there. A lot of people in the Howie Carr Network have been there. My wife and I went down there. We loved it. We loved the tranquility. We just love the ambiance of being down on the Cape. So get to NausetBeachInn.com now and book your rooms. Again, April stays at the Nauset Beach Inn from $249.99 a night, and in May from $259.99 a night. Don't delay because the rooms are going fast. To reserve your ocean view room, go to NausetBeachInn.com. That's NausetBeachInn.com.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne. I've been in for Grace all week. She will be back on Monday. A lot to catch her up on. One of the stories that we followed all week, I hoped I'd be able to stop talking about it, but it's Ronna McDaniel and this disaster of NBC hiring her, the revolt from their on-air talent, then splitting ways with her. And now we're learning Ronna McDaniel has retained Brian Friedman. He's a lawyer who has represented Megyn Kelly, Chris Cuomo, Don Lemon, Tucker Carlson in their previously splits. He's a prominent LA attorney that's worked with a lot of these people who have been fired or split ways. And she's seeking the $600,000 owed under her contract, plus defamation and hostile workplace claims. I mean, they're going to get a big payday, right?
That's awesome. She should.
Well, the thing that I talked about this yesterday, the fact that the way that MSNBC misrepresented what happened to their people, which I know it's hard to believe that NBC or MSNBC would mislead anyone about this, about anything. But you had the president of MSNBC, Rashida Jones, going and telling all the on-air talent, oh, don't worry, she'd never be on MSNBC. We don't want her on MSNBC. You guys are totally in the right. And then it comes out that she was part of the hiring, that Ronna McDaniel originally said, I don't want to go on MSNBC. And they said, we'll pay you more if you do it. They sweetened the deal. They enticed her to agree to be on MSNBC. And then they lied to their people saying, oh, we would never have her on MSNBC. Like, we would never make you do that. You heard Joe and Mika and Rachel and Joy and Lawrence O'Donnell and others. I don't even know the other ones' names because I never watched that channel. But they all had this like, oh, we would never. Yes, you would. You did. And you created this. And they're in the headlines nonstop, right? There's another story in The Washington Post. The headline is that NBC and MSNBC question swirl over the Ronna McDaniel hire. This is focusing on what I was just saying. MSNBC president Rashida Jones told her host they would never have to book the former RNC chair, but people familiar with the hiring said she helped court McDaniel and promised that she'd appear on the cable network and paid her more money to do it. So, I mean, that's got to be really, I would think, after the revolt you saw this week, I would think that's going to like spill this tension over. You're going to have more fights within it. You have NBC News staff reportedly fear Republican backlash after Ronna McDaniel firing, according to angry GOP sources. I mean, think there's going to be backlash. Like, the fact, like, it's not so much about Ronna McDaniel. Like, I don't think anyone in the GOP now, I mean, she probably has some friends, people that she worked with on the committee or whatever, but the rank and file normal person doesn't care whether Ronna McDaniel is on MSNBC or NBC at all or not. Like, we don't care. What we care about is the reason why she was let go and the lying that's gone on and the defamation that's gone on. So what they've said about her, what they've said about how she pursued the contract and wanting to work there, she had other options. She had other places that she could have gone, which, by the way, shame on you, Ronna McDaniel, for picking them as your business partner in the first place. But then Chuck Todd, honestly, to his credit, Chuck Todd made a nuanced argument, but he knew what he was doing when he did it. But his nuanced argument was, hey, Meet the Press has a long-standing tradition. We don't pay guests to come on. They're news figures. If you're a paid commentator, we put you on the panel. We ask you for advice, and we make clear that's what it is. But we had this pre-scheduled interview with Ronna McDaniel as a newsmaker. We were going to interview her, and while we had already booked that, everyone knew we booked it, then they put her on the payroll and started to pay her, so that made it weird and awkward and against what we normally do. Okay, so I get that objection. A little strange he's talking out about it on air, but, you know, he's still kind of the head of the show, and I think maybe he's going to get it back because Kristen Welker does such a terrible job. But then he gave permission to the other on-air talent to complain about the other things, which are largely that if you publicly support Trump and you haven't denounced him, you're not going to be allowed on air. And think whatever you want. Denounce Trump if you want, like, whatever. Whatever your position is going to be. But when you start drawing a line in the sand that people that support the other party nominee for president of the United States, the other major party, when that's your line in the sand, is that if you support and enable Donald Trump, you can't come on our network in a year when you have Donald Trump running as the Republican nominee for president, you're tipping your hand at how you're going to conduct the election, how you're going to conduct coverage, how you're going to be free and fair, how you're going to be this national arbiter of the public conversation and discourse during a national presidential election. That's what the backlash is for. Nobody cares about Ronna McDaniel as a person, as an individual, as the one person that, oh, we must have her on NBC. It's the broader implication of what the network is doing and how they're trying to, like Facebook before them, put their thumb on the scale to influence the outcome of the election. That's what we're talking about. That's what we're seeing. That's what we're hearing. And you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist or a right-wing radical to feel that way. We're low on time, but let's try to get George in real quick. George, you're on the Grace Curley Show.
Hi, how are you?
Good. We only got 30 seconds. Go ahead, George.
Yeah. Is there another station in Maine where I can get conservative talk radio? I like you. You're good. I know what station you're on. Just, I live in Maine, been here 3 years, and I kind of listen to Massachusetts. I'd rather try to find a, get in bed with Maine now.
Yeah, thanks for the call, George. I mean, you could go to, in Maine, we're broadcasting on WGAN and WGAN.com. There are several other stations that you can look for, but I'll tell you that the work that Grace does here on this station and Howie Carr and the Howie Carr Radio Network, you can certainly access all the programming that we have, and I'd encourage you to do that. When we come back, we'll get more into, I'll finish my comments on Ronna McDaniel. I'll get into some of the other things happening. You really need to watch this video, though, of Joe Biden rising out of the floor at the Radio City Music Hall. They won't even, like, but does anyone know how he got off stage? That's what I really, really need to know. Our search for the truth on how Joe Biden got off stage at Radio City Music Hall continues when we come back here on The Grace Curley Show. My name is Aaron Chadbourne, and I'm filling in for Grace.